Welcome to the Drew Allen Show. This is Drew Allen, your host. Now, it is ordinarily, in a rational world, of course, the government's primary job to avoid war at all costs, right? War should be a last resort and only utilized when, of course, absolutely necessary to protect the national interest, say, of American citizens of the United States of America. That's what war's supposed to be. Now, we shouldn't be going and seeking out war. That would be insane, right? Just looking to get in fights. I mean, it's like hiring a bouncer at the club and asking that bouncer to go and instigate fights instead of preventing them and breaking them up. Well, that's what's happening right now in the United States of America. The Biden administration seems hell-bent on escalating war in Russia. That means getting the United States and, of course, Western allies, if you will, whatever allies means today, I don't know. We seem to be changing the definition of allies and choosing different ones and alienating old ones that we used to rely on and used to rely on us, conversely. But the United States, the Biden administration, has made it very clear that they have no interest in preventing war between Russia and Ukraine. They've already interrupted and prevented any kind of peace negotiations. And we'll get into it soon. I've got Jessamyn Dodd, a Epoch Times journalist, coming on to discuss what's going on in Israel. But, you know, I want to talk to her about what is U.S. foreign policy. What is it? It doesn't really make sense to me. But you have the Biden administration announcing that Secretary of State Blinken saying that the that Ukraine is going to join NATO. Going to join NATO. Now, to be clear, that crosses the red line in the sand drawn by Russia. If you wanted to escalate war, if you wanted to get involved in a World War III situation, it is very clear that that is exactly what one should do to poke Russia and put them in a position where that's going to be the outcome. Now, look, none of this, you don't have to like Putin. You don't have to agree with Russia. You don't have to think they're a good place or run by a good government. None of that. This is about American interests. This is about protecting America's sons and daughters. This is about doing what is right for America. This is about doing what makes sense. This is about preventing bloodshed. That's all that matters. That's all that matters here. And this announcement that Ukraine is going to now suddenly join NATO, which, by the way, is an absolute 180, a complete reversal, of course, from our previous doctrine, if you will. Now, I know that they want to escalate the situation in Russia and Ukraine, because in the past, the reason that, as a matter of fact, Ukraine previously applied to join NATO in circa 2008, and they were rejected. Now, one of the reasons they were rejected, one of the primary reasons, is because they didn't want to escalate tensions with Russia. Now, I just want to go back in time here and read a couple things to you. This is from 2008. That time, Ukraine tried to join NATO, and NATO said no. Just a pull quote here. Russia, however, was openly hostile to Ukrainian membership in NATO. The Kremlin opposed any eastward expansion of the alliance. And Russian President Vladimir Putin warned that NATO membership would force Russia to treat Ukraine as an enemy. Well, there you have it. So if you want to go to war with Russia, this is one way to do it. And, you know, I don't really care what the lunatics will say with regard to what I'm about to say here, because they don't know what they're talking about, and they're morons, frankly. But, you know, Russia is a sovereign nation, and the reality is that they still suffer humiliation to this day from the collapse of the USSR. I'm not taking a moral stance on Russia. I'm just telling you that they are a sovereign nation with people that feel this way. And obviously, Russia has not been viewed as an ally of the United States of America. Now, they're not the USSR. We have not been involved in a Cold War since the collapse of the Soviet Union. But the Russian people, of course, like any nation, aspire to greatness, aspire to improve their country, have their own specific history. that is unique to them, that has nothing to do with us. And obviously, Russia, just like we view them, views the United States and the West as a threat to their livelihood, to their well-being. And so as they see themselves being encircled by NATO, which is what? It's a military alliance. They feel threatened. And so the reality is, it's a delicate situation. And so why now do you have the United States of America and this Biden administration reversing course and admitting Ukraine, knowing that this is a red line for Russia? Well, I'll tell you why they're doing it. They need desperately a justification to escalate tension. I can't tell you why. I can't tell you why this administration, apart from them being evil, perhaps, I can't tell you why they want to send America's sons and daughters overseas. I can't tell you why they want to escalate things. I can't tell you why, in their hearts and minds, they refuse to try and de-escalate, to force Russia and Ukraine to come to an agreement to prevent bloodshed. I can't answer those questions. But what I can tell you is that this particular motion is intended to escalate things. It's intended to give them justification to continue this war that shouldn't be going on to begin with. Because the public, the American public, the public at large is tired of this. We've been lied to. They told us that Ukraine could win. We've given them all this money. Ukraine doesn't stand a chance. They never stood a chance. I said this from the beginning. They do not have the ability to defeat Russia. They don't. They don't have the personnel, the military power. They don't have anything. The resources, they can't win. And early on, of course, it was odd because the Biden administration clearly wanted there to be conflict, wanted there to be war, and wanted this to continue because they didn't want there to be any peace deal. They interrupted that, squashed it. And so now you have them reversing course. And it's inexplicable in so many ways. Now, here's an article by Josh Cohen. This is just from Reuters back in May 5th, 2016. I just think it's relevant. You should know this. Because shouldn't we be asking ourselves, why are we reversing course? If in the past we didn't admit Ukraine to NATO because we didn't want to escalate war with Russia, why now would we change course and escalate tensions and go to war with Russia and admit Ukraine to NATO? Because that's what's happening. Well, one of the reasons in this commentary why Ukraine's NATO membership is not in America's interests, given the massive military force Moscow can bring to bear around Ukraine, any American strategist advocating inviting Kiev into NATO should answer some difficult military questions. Recent war games revealed NATO would lose a war in the Baltics to Russia within 36 to 60 hours. And it's hard to envision anything other than a similar outcome in Ukraine. In addition, Washington confronts not only significant military obstacles in defending Ukraine, but also faces a significant gap between the Russian and American stakes in the country. And of course, we have to remember that we had an invasion of Crimea under Barack Obama. Barack Obama was unwilling to supply Ukraine with any lethal arms. He wouldn't deploy any troops to Ukraine. So why now suddenly do we care? Why now suddenly do we care? No clue. We'll get into this a little bit later, some more, I think. But it's worth pointing out that, go at Cube Cut 1. I want to play Cut 1. I want you to hear Blinken for the record, because this is the moment that could start World War III. This is what we could look to in the future if things continue under this regime that we're being held hostage by the Biden administration, that is destroying all of our lives and future. Go ahead and play Cut 1.
Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose at the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership and to create a clear pathway for Ukraine moving forward.
So there you hear it. When it comes to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, this Biden administration is hell-bent on escalating tensions. They don't care about Russian lives at all, certainly. They want to escalate. They want to go to war. Russia is viewed as the aggressor, and America will stop at nothing to defeat the Russians. Now, In another part of the world, in the Middle East, you have a different situation. You have Israel, which, of course, for many, many, many years, decades, has been attacked by Hamas, the so-called Palestinians over there. And, of course, not long ago, more than 1,000 innocent Israelis were slaughtered at a music festival by the terrorists, Hamas. So there's the aggressor, and yet you have the Biden administration demanding that Israel put down its arms and ask for nothing in return. But they want this to end. They want this to end. Quite the contrast between Israel and Ukraine. You have to wonder why. To join me and try and help me figure this out and answer this question is Jessamine Dodd. She is a journalist at Epoch Times, Epoch Times, tomatoes, tomatoes. And she will hopefully help us figure out what is going on with the Biden foreign policy. Hey, Jessamine.
Hi, Drew. Thank you.
Well, I am glad you're here. You couldn't have arrived a moment, at a better moment. I don't understand. I mean, you have the Biden administration, which, of course, initially pretended, at least feigned, some kind of support for Israel, but very, very quickly has shown that they seem to favor Hamas over Israel. And for the life of me, I can't quite figure it out. What is the Biden foreign policy when it comes to Israel right now?
Well, you know, I think we're all kind of trying to figure that out. When October 7th first happened, you know, the Biden administration came out, condemned Hamas, condemned the actions of Hamas, and, you know, said that they supported Israel. And now it seems to me, it looks like they are, you know, buckling under the public pressure. You know, you have Gen Xers, Gen Zs, you know, these protesters calling him Genocide Joe. So there's a lot of misinformation happening. And what I've seen is people, you know, Democrats and liberals coming out who formerly supported Joe Biden, now saying they won't vote for him if he supports Israel. And I think it looks like he's buckling under pressure.
Well, it's a very bizarre situation to be in. I mean, you're split in terms of your party. Now, the Democrats have done this to themselves with their identity politics and certainly catering these radical groups, but it doesn't represent the entire Democrat Party. On the one hand, you have many of these people, like we've seen on the college indoctrination camps around the country, that support Hamas. And of course, you have other longtime Democrats who are Jewish, for example, the ones that aren't self-loathing, I might add, that have a problem with their catering towards Hamas and the terrorists. I mean, I guess I don't understand. Are we supposed to understand that there are more radical pro-Hamas terrorists that are in the base of the Democratic Party today than there are pro-Israel Americans?
I mean, supporting Hamas in itself is mind-boggling to me. You know, on October 7th, Hamas infiltrated, as you mentioned in your introduction, the music festival. They kidnapped, they tortured, they slaughtered children, men, women, families, burning things down. We still have over 100 hostages being held in Gaza, and nothing is being done about those hostages. You know, there, and if you speak up about it, you're immediately shunned. It's the most bizarre reaction ever. Hamas is a terrorist organization. They're not militants. This isn't a freedom fight. They are a terrorist faction, and they need to be dealt with as such. Seeing these people, the anti-Semitism, the people marching on college campuses, screaming intifada, you know, wanting to, from the river to the sea, I don't even think they understand what that means. What river? Jews, we know what river. What sea? We know what sea. What does that mean? They're not saying they want to live side by side peacefully with the Jewish community. They're saying they want to take over Israel and wipe out the Jews. They want to annihilate Jews. Hamas has been on camera, in interviews, in speeches, saying that they're not going to stop in Israel. They want to wipe out Jews worldwide. You know, they brutally, Hamas brutally raped women. This is the UN came out with a report and they verified that. Hamas brutally raped women and people don't care. Where's the outrage? Where's the outrage? Where's the Me Too movement? Where is that? It's like, we don't believe that. You either have to be, you know, a conspiracy theorist or a rape denialist to ignore what they did to Israeli women. It's like Me Too, unless you're a Jew.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, look, I mean, there's no outrage left over, I'm afraid, Jessamyn, because it can only be utilized when it comes to outrage over Ukraine and Russia and Putin. And, you know, I cannot help but compare these two conflicts because it does expose the hypocrisy and, frankly, the idiocy of the Biden administration, people who would support Hamas, but then, you know, also support, you know, this war in Ukraine. I mean, I got to be honest, and I'm not a sympathizer with anyone. I shouldn't have to say this anymore, but Putin is far more rational than Hamas. You know, what Putin wants is basically land. He doesn't want, you know, Ukraine to be totally taken by the West. I mean, you know, there's a whole history of the Soviet Union. And over here, on the other hand, you have Hamas, which obviously is genocidal. They made it very clear, as you've pointed out, what they want. They want the eradication of the Jewish people. And yet, I want you to cue up cut three. I want to play this for Jessamyn to respond to. This is Joe Scarborough, amidst all of this, calling for a two-state solution. Play this cut. I want your reaction.
Because we are Israel's guarantor. Mm-hmm. Not just militarily, but we guarantee their existence. And if we're going to guarantee their existence like we have since 1948, then we need a partner that is going to act responsibly and it's going to understand there has to be a two-state solution. And now they've moved away from there's a no two-state solution. Well, it's just not going to work. And the United States can't continue as Israel's partner if there's not going to be a two-state solution, because we're going to see war for another, what, 60, 70, 80 years, and we're going to be in the middle of it.
Well, Drew, let me tell you something. Hamas does not want a two-state solution. They've made that very, very clear. They want it all. They do not want to live peacefully. There are, right now, Gazans, Palestinians, Arabs living in Jerusalem, you know, serving in Congress in Jerusalem, in Israel. They are living there peacefully. They have been. They don't want that. They're not going to stop. This is a terrorist organization. So for anybody to say, let's just have a two-state solution, you know, why don't you throw in a few unicorns too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, you're dealing with reality, and the reality is there can't be a two-state solution. And you know what? In effect, there is a two-state situation right now in the sense that, you know, Israel has ceded land. They've allowed Hamas to set up shop right across the border on their land, if you will. And what's been the result of that? The consequence is that rockets are being fired into Israel constantly. And I got to point out, too, you know, if Mexico, the government of Mexico, started firing rockets from Tijuana into San Diego tomorrow, what would the United States, what should the United States reaction be? It would be to annihilate Mexico and make them bend the knee and basically do whatever we said, because they're the aggressor there and we're not going to tolerate anybody attacking us like that. And yet that's exactly what's happening in Israel every single year. And yet you still have people, oh, Israel's the aggressor. They're the occupier. When they've done everything they can to entertain these fantasies of a so-called two-state solution, even, by the way, offering a two-state solution in the past that was rejected.
It was rejected. And also, you know, first of all, I just want to say that that is a great analogy, because if Mexico decided to come in and say, hey, we want Texas back, we want San Diego back, that was ours at one point, we're going to kidnap some of your teenagers and keep them hostage. And if you react, then you're the bad guy, right? That is exactly what happened. So I'm glad that you used that analogy, because I think a lot of people do forget about that. And Hamas has rejected several ceasefires. Drew, there was a ceasefire on October 6th. You know, let's not forget about that. There was no war on October 6th. And Hamas has been offered several ceasefires, and they have turned it down at least three times because they don't want to return the hostages. They want to keep Israeli people hostage, and they want to torture them. That's what Hamas does. Torture, and they kill.
Yeah, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but just kind of going off memory, you know, Trump said something that some people found controversial very recently within the last few days, certainly, about how really Israel needs to basically hurry it up because they're losing the information war out there. And I don't find it particularly controversial in some way. I think it's sympathetic with Israel, and it's a realistic outlook. I mean, you have this, our own country, the media doing everything they can to put pressure on Israel to basically go back to the status quo and effectively just act like their version of 9/11 never, ever happened. And it's shameful, of course, but God bless Netanyahu. I got to be honest. I mean, he's the type of pressure that he's under in many ways. I cannot imagine basically him against the world. What do you do if you're Israel right now? What do you do if you're Netanyahu?
I mean, to any logical person, the thing would be to protect your people. You know, if someone comes in and kidnaps your citizens and rapes them and tortures them and murders them and says they want to completely annihilate everyone in your country, you have to defend yourselves. You know, why is Israel, any other country, it would be fine. But when Israel chooses to defend themselves against Hamas, who are not freedom fighters, they are terrorists, then they're the bad guys. And I understand what you're saying, that it does need to hurry up. This has been going on long enough. If people are out there and they are saying ceasefire now, and you're advocating for a ceasefire without also advocating for the return of the hostages, that is a problem. That is a product of the misinformation machine that we are seeing. It is rampant all over social media, all over. I have gotten death threats. I have been called a Zionist pig. I have been called everything but a child of God in my inbox. I have had my life threatened and my child's life threatened for simply saying, bring them home now. That's not peace.
No, it's not. And I mean, I have to ask, and by the way, Jessamine happens to be Jewish, as you know, I guess here, you know, I didn't lead with, oh, Jessamine also happens to be Jewish. Let me say this first, because I lost my train of thought, to be honest. It was very, very important, so I forgot it. I want to remind people something before I bring this up and ask you, because you know, it wasn't that long ago that, right, we had a botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. It was a horrendous failure. And we, of course, had American service members, 13 of them, that were slaughtered. And in retaliation, the Biden administration carried out a drone strike that murdered 10 innocent Afghan civilians. One of them was an aid worker that worked for some organization in California, and seven of the murdered were children. And no one in the Biden administration was held accountable for it. They barely even issued an apology. And as a matter of fact, they tried to cover it up. After they carried out that strike that murdered innocent Afghan civilians, they claimed that they had killed, you know, two ISIS-K planners and so on and so forth. And of course, there are, unfortunately, tragedies that take place in war environments. But I just point that out because the big talking point from the left right now and the media that they're trying to seize upon is, of course, that Israel's military, they carried out an airstrike and seven aid workers in Gaza were killed that, you know, weren't Hamas or whatever else. And they want to use this, of course, as justification to basically end things now. And I just find it hard to stomach in many ways the hypocrisy of a government and administration that has done the same thing except even worse themselves in Afghanistan and then has the cojones to come here and use this against Israel.
Well, I think you said it best. That is the hypocrisy of the Biden administration. You know, rules for thee, but not for me. And a lot of the air, and what happened with those aid workers, let me just be very clear, it was extremely tragic. And they should not have been there. And they were there helping the innocent people in Gaza, because there are a lot of people in Gaza that are innocent that want to be free of Hamas's rule, you know, free Palestine from Hamas. But yes, there's selective outrage. You know, when Biden does it, it's not a problem. But when Israel does it, and it comes down to, you know, Jew hatred. Again, in the media, we've seen a lot of reports. They're quick to say Israel bombed this house or Israel bombed this hospital, and they failed to report that in that house were arms and bombs made by Hamas. Underneath the hospital, there were missiles that Hamas had put under there. They're hiding their missiles and they're hiding their guns and their bombs in civilian homes and in hospitals, so that if they are targeted to take those missiles out, you know, it's Israel bombed a hospital, not Israel took out missiles by Hamas.
Well, and of course, and
it's
Hamas.
The narrative is just the narrative being spun online and in the media. You know, I think there's a lack of education, honestly, and I think people don't understand that there are people that don't want to live under Hamas's rule. You know, they don't want a terror organization to rule their city. You know, women are second-class citizens. Gay and lesbian people are second-class citizens. Black people are segregated, and they refer to them as slaves. The word that Gazans use for Black people is slaves. Hamas is anti-Black, Hamas is anti-LGBTQ, and Hamas is anti-woman.
And yet, you have the very people who, in the United States, claim that those are the greatest sins one can commit in terms of not being open-minded and not accepting these people. And certainly, everyone deserves respect. And Hamas, of course, is the antithesis of everything the left claims to be. And yet, it shows that their the Democrat Party is the real religion that they worship. So it doesn't matter. I mean, they can sit there and ignore the fact that gays are thrown off buildings over in, Gaza and support the very people that do it. And I mean, that's the point, though. Hamas is a terrorist organization. They are the government there. And, people just need to be realistic, I think, about how you deal with that. It's never going to end unless there is drastic change within that country. And I would remind people, again, there are innocent people that nobody wants to die. It's absolutely tragic. And not every person that lives under Hamas is a Jew hater, but a lot of them are, because they are indoctrinated to believe to be anti-Semitic. And I have to ask, with the Democrat Party and their positions, the Biden administration and Blinken and all these people that seem to be rah-rah for Hamas, what's the explanation? Are they anti-Semitic? Do they hate Jews? I mean, what is this?
It comes down to Jew hatred, plain and simple, full stop. You know, there's a denial. People want to deny Israelis and Jews their homeland. You know, every other country is allowed to have their homeland and their motherland, but for Israel, it's not okay. Jews have been in Israel for thousands of years, you know, and there's all kinds of Jews. You've got Ethiopian Jews, you've got Mizrahi, you've got the Ashkenazi. You know, it's a multicultural country, you know. And of course, when the diaspora started and Jews started, you know, going out all over Europe and setting up roots, you know, we emigrated to other countries. And then for some reason in the 1940s, had to leave Poland, had to leave Germany, had to go back to the motherland, had to flee. And people still want to deny this. And, you know, people say, you're a colonizer. Jews are colonizing. How can you colonize your own homeland? You know, to that I say to every, you know, white, blue-haired, you know, college student with a nose ring who's saying Jews are colonizers, well, where did your family come from? How did they get to America? Then you need to go back to, they need to go back to their home country, whether your family's been here for thousands of years or not, hundreds of years. If you're saying that, then put your money where your mouth is. Go home. You know, you can't have it both ways. But there seems to be a lot of selectivity with this, you know. And they're saying Gaza's an open-air prison. They have a wall. They're not letting anybody into Israel. I need to remind your viewers that the wall and the border that they have between Gaza and Egypt is one of the most secure borders in the world. It is reinforced steel, barbed wire. It is guarded. They will not let any Gazans into Egypt. There are 7 Arab nations in that area, and not one of them will accept a Gazan refugee. Why is that?
Exactly. Why is that? We know the answer. I mean, I think you're right. There's just an amazing amount of ignorance out there. Anybody who's a serious person knows historically there's no such thing as Palestine. But, you know, that point aside, and it's a good point. I agree with you 100%. But this idea that it's someone's land or whatever land, I mean, it's whoever's there and whoever can control it. I mean, by this definition of a everything was colonized or taken at some point. Geography, you know, the landscape has changed. Countries move based on war and so on and so forth. And people want to deny human nature today. They want to pretend like mankind has changed in some way. But if you go with this argument, against Israel in their own homeland and so on and so forth. Well, look, I mean, a third of the United States of America we took from the Spanish. So, you know, that belongs to Mexico. Are we supposed to hand it over because at one point they were there and now we're here? I mean, it's so stupid and asinine. You could go through every country in the world and say somebody else was here first. I mean, these just aren't serious people.
Well, you mentioned that with Ukraine. You know, you mentioned that with the Ukraine. Yet the Biden administration is sending billions and billions and billions of dollars to support Ukraine.
Yeah.
But, you know, Israel's a problem. So it's...
Oh, yeah. No, amazing point. Amazing point. I mean,
I didn't money even know into the Ukraine, pumping it, our tax dollars, billions. Like, you know, it's over $70 billion to date in aid to Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's endless. And, you know, I can't answer the question of why they're doing what they are. There's information out there that people can look at. But, you know, Ukraine is like Puerto Rico. It's a U.S. territory. And that's how it's been since even Bush, since 2000. I mean, this is the same thing. People's understanding of history in Russia, Ukraine, the USSR, and the United States involvement there is almost as pathetic and missing as their information and knowledge about the history of Israel. And it's shameful to me that we don't teach any of that.
Well, the other thing, Drew, is that, you know, Russia and China are allies with Iran, and Iran is backing Hamas. So if you're out there protesting and you're aligning yourself with Russia and Iran and China, you know, you might want to rethink your protest.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bizarre that people seem to miss the fact that that is a new alliance, and actually it's been around for a little while. And of course, China is the leader of that because they're the most powerful nation of those three, and they're of course a rival to the United States of America. And so, yes, I mean, China, we have this cozy relationship with. I've got this clip of John Kirby out there saying, yeah, we do not support Taiwan independence, basically opening the door and inviting China to come in and seize Taiwan. Why is it okay for China to come in and have their way with Taiwan, but Russia can't come in and have their way with Ukraine? I mean, there's just no, I guess the foreign policy of the Biden administration is to ask themselves what the correct rational response should be, and then to do the opposite.
Well, it's whatever's going to help Biden's campaign and his family. And by the way, Xi Jinping has refused to publicly condemn Hamas. He has refused to refer to them as terrorists. And there's a reason for that. But also, you know, Biden does have very strong ties to Ukraine with his son formerly sitting on the board of energy at Ukraine. So, you know, those are things that need to be looked at.
Jessamyn, can you stick around for another 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay. Let's take a short break. We come back. I want to talk to Jessamyn because she is an expert in these things. And we're going to keep her around because she's brilliant and she adds to the program. We'll be right back.
We've learned through the pandemic, we can never be caught unprepared again. And so many Americans, when COVID hit, they had nothing in the house. Stores were shut down and doctor's offices were shut down. And even if doctors prescribed drugs, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, pharmacists wouldn't fill the prescriptions. That was a nightmare.
Now the situation is much worse. We have these horrible supply chain problems. In our emergency medical kit at the wellness company, we have 8 prescription drugs that are all potentially life-saving.
Most people have died with COVID. They died in the hospital because they didn't receive early treatment.
Every American family should have one of these.
I can tell you the wellness company kit is the answer.
The markets are getting crazy, and now is the time to protect yourself from economic turmoil. Silver is in the headlines right now and creating lots of excitement as the price of silver is extremely attractive compared to gold. A call to Swiss America gets you the scoop on whether the silver opportunity is for real. What you'll discover will really blow your mind. Today, silver faces a huge shortage due to the rising demand by military, solar, electric cars, and computers, all of which depend on silver. But right now, silver is priced to sell according to worldwide experts. Now, to help you get started, Swiss America is offering beautiful United States Walking Liberty half dollars, issued by the U.S. Mint from 1916 to 1947 and minted in 90% pure silver for a special introductory price. Limit of 250 per customer while supplies last. So call the number on your screen or visit SwissAmerica.com, because now is the time to rediscover silver.
All right. So we've got Jessamyn Dodd back with us, a journalist at the Epoch Times. Jessamyn, how do you actually pronounce it? Because I actually asked another of your colleagues recently from the TV side, and he said kind of tomatoes, tomatoes. You know, Canadians say it this way. And
I say Epic. It could be Epoch. I don't really know.
Yeah.
People say Epoch differently. I've had people that I work with that say Epic and people that I work with that say Epoch.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll stick with what I feel like saying, which is Epic. I want to play this cut for you. This is what we're talking about. John Kirby coming out and saying that the U.S. doesn't support Taiwan independence. Play this cut and then we'll talk about it.
Xi reportedly told President Biden during their summit in San Francisco that Beijing plans to reunify Taiwan with mainland China. Did the Chinese leader bring up a similar sentiment in their call the other day? And if so, what was President Biden's response?
Certainly Taiwan came up in the context of the call. There's not a single discussion that we don't have with senior leaders in the PRC where we don't talk about Taiwan. Of course it came up. I won't characterize President Xi's comments, but I can tell you that President Biden was very, very clear that nothing's changed about our one China policy. We don't support independence for Taiwan, but we also don't want to see the status quo changed in a unilateral way, and certainly not by force.
He doesn't want to change the status quo. It sounds like he just changed the status quo in that, look, I got to say this first, Jessamyn, and correct me if I'm wrong. I have long said that the U.S. policy towards Taiwan is stupid at best anyway. I mean, it's really pathetic because on one side of our mouth, we say, you know, Taiwan belongs to China. And on the other side of our mouth, we seem to say, well, wink, wink, nod, you know, we kind of support, you know, Taiwan. And so we try to ride the fence on this in the past.
They do ride the fence on it because obviously when China does, and Xi Jinping has been very open about wanting to invade Taiwan, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. It's who's the U.S. going to back? So I think they have to walk a tight line saying, a little bit of both on this side and on that side. Because if China does invade Taiwan, you know, they're not going to say, well, let's go ahead and back China, communist, you know, the CCP. Let's go ahead and back them, because that would look very bad for the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very clear, though, that the Biden administration and the Democrat Party at large, I mean, they are very friendly with the communist Chinese. They allow them to push them around. Obviously, they rolled out the red carpet. San Francisco hasn't looked better than the time that Xi Jinping visited the city of poop and needles. It was all cleaned up for him. And, I have to ask the question, you know, how many of our politicians do you think are compromised in terms of whether it's bribery and so on and so forth that would lead them to be such puppets for the communist Chinese, our greatest enemy, I think, in my opinion.
Well, Drew, when you say politician and corruption, unfortunately, for many, many years, it has gone hand in hand. A lot of politicians are bought. A lot of politicians are compromised. A lot of politicians do have under the table deals. You know, Biden himself, his family is being investigated for ties to China and payments from China. So, you know, who and how many, I can't say. But does it happen? Absolutely. And yeah. You can always tell by when you say this is what's right, you know, like in a humanitarian issue or, you know, on a global scale, like this is what the human thing is. This is what the right thing is. And if you see the politicians doing the opposite, you have to question why and who's in their pocket.
Well, and I didn't plan on getting...
And the thing again also about San Francisco, it's amazing how they were able to go ahead and, you know, they basically just rounded up the homeless people and carted them off. You know, they had a solution. Sorry, my camera's a little... They had a solution, you know, because they didn't want to look bad in front of Xi Jinping. They didn't want to look bad in front of Chinese diplomats. But for American citizens, for people who have... a storefront that they can't get into in San Francisco, for people who can't get into their homes because there are addicts and homeless people blocking the entrances to their apartments. You know, that's okay, but we also will take care of it when we need to look good for people.
Yeah, it's the facade. I mean, it's interesting. On the one hand, one thing that's clear that's happened politically in terms of systems is, of course, that the communist Chinese have brought in and implemented aspects of capitalism to make themselves more competitive. And the United States, on the other hand, has actually brought in and instituted communist policies to make themselves more like communist China. And when I saw that happening in San Francisco, I thought about North Korea or China or places that have these dictatorships that their citizens live in misery for the most part. When the Olympics, for example, comes in and is hosted there, you know, it's like the Potemkin thing where they put up this facade and clean up everything around it so that people think that things are wonderful and beautiful and glorious there, when in reality, just move around the corner and look a little further and you realize how devastating the policies are. And that's the Democrat Party. Absolute denial. I mean, I got to say, I think it's terrifying right now because it's like you could go through world history and look at kings and monarchs and so on and so forth that obviously fear the end of their reign and they become increasingly isolated to convince themselves of those things that aren't true, to prevent any kind of actual truth from actually coming in to change course. And I want to play this clip for you, actually, of Jill Biden, for example. This is cut 8. This is her being confronted about the swing states in which Donald Trump seems to be certainly outperforming Joe Biden. Why wouldn't he, given the circumstances? And this is her response. Play cut 8.
But when these polls, like the Wall Street Journal one, land in the White House and he's losing in all the battleground states.
No, he's not losing in all the battleground states. He's coming up and he's even or doing better. So, you know what? Once people start to focus in and they see their two choices, it's obvious that Joe will win this election.
All right.
Well, there you go. You know, let's just deny facts. Let's deny numbers. Let's deny stats. It's up to every journalist to press people when they say these things to say, well, what about this number? Or how is that possible? And not to just to let them get away, because, again, we're talking about the misinformation machine that can be the media, that can be social media, especially where, you know, you tell a lie over and over enough, you'll get some people to believe it.
Yeah, it's extremely dangerous.
And by the way, you know, with the San Francisco, they did the same thing down at the border. They moved all the migrants. They cleaned it all up, took all the tents, all of the outreach programs, all of the men and women and children who were sleeping down there at the border, and they moved them for photo ops for Joe Biden. And they said, see, there's no crisis at the border. Look at how clean it is. There's nobody here. You know, and, you know, some people will believe that. I myself have been to the border, and it is not like that at all.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that there are enough just rational, sane Americans? Do you think that there are enough people that even have a sense of self-preservation that are going to say, you know, screw you, Jill Biden, with your fake Dr. Jill with your EDD, like, I'm not buying this? Or do you think that Americans are actually, enough of them are gobbling this up and they're going to the grocery store and, you know, they're pulling out credit cards to pay for their groceries, and they come home and Joe Biden tells them, you've never had more money in your pocket? Are they going to buy that?
Whether they believe it and whether they accept it are two different things. They might know it, but are they going to accept it and act on it? I don't know. Because a lot of times people will say, well, I can't do this and I can't vote for that person. I can't afford groceries. I don't have health insurance. You know, these are things that people say. We see them online posting receipts of their groceries, of their food. You know, $15 for a Happy Meal or a burger meal, whatever it is, at McDonald's. It never used to be like that. So do you want to keep living this way, or do you want to go back to being able to afford things? Do you want to be able to afford more than just your rent? You know, some people will know this, but they'll say, I know this, but I'm still going to vote for Biden. You know?
Yeah.
There's several choices. You don't have to, you know, it's a weird thing that I see with people that I know that are, you know, very liberal. And they either say, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden because he supports Israel, or I know my life is hell and I've been evicted and I don't have insurance and my job pay is not going up and I can't afford groceries for my children, but I'm still going to vote for him. So there's sort of a disconnect.
Yeah. Yeah, there always is. I mean, Democrat Party policies, you know, never lead to success. I mean, it's like, you know, Saul Alinsky and Rules for Radicals. I mean, you know, they create a problem and, you know, they have a solution that's not going to solve it, ready to go. And then, of course, they act like that's the only one that's going to save them. And they just kind of rinse and repeat over and over again. Cue up cut 9. I want to play this one more clip before I let you go. This is on the same lines of just absolute denial. I mean, I just think this is the death knell for the Democrats. I mean, unless they can get enough illegals in the system to vote for them in 2024, I just don't see any possibility that Biden can win re-election when you have people like Karine Jean-Pierre, certainly not the best and brightest of the American people, that says things like this. Cut 9, go.
I have a question about electric vehicles. Ford said today it's delaying production on an electric SUV. Tesla earlier this week said that its sales are plunging. Do these types of developments make the administration rethink their EV policy?
No, not at all.
Realistic to go from about 7 or 8% of sales to 50% of sales in 8 years if the automakers themselves are cutting back on production?
We believe, and we've seen that U.S. manufacturing jobs have increased. Jobs have indeed increased. And when you see a boom like this, that means you need auto workers, right? It can't happen on its own. And so we believe this is working.
Word salad. Karine Jean-Pierre's job as a press secretary or Joe Biden is to lie. Her assignment is to make him look good and make his policies look good. Her job, if there's anything that comes out that is contrary, if a reporter asks something that's contrary to what something Biden has said or a press statement that the White House has put out, her job is to talk until, you know, you start rethinking it. Like, maybe she's right. That's her job, is confusion and lies.
Yeah, it was amazing. She didn't even answer the question there. I mean, he's asking her whether, you know, this is realistic if you're going to do it. And she goes off talking about job creation that this is going to do and achieve. And I have to point out that, you know, when it comes to things that are actually realistic and obviously to the benefit of the American citizen, the Democrat Party and Democrats say it's unrealistic and they can't do it. It was Obama when he said, you know, get used to this economic growth. This is how low it's going to be in the future. It was the same thing when he said, you know, we can't pursue these peace deals in the Middle East. And you have somebody like Trump who does not believe anything's impossible. And of course, he did what John Kerry and Obama previously said couldn't happen, which was to create these historic peace deals in the Abraham Accords in the Middle East. And here you have something that's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely not realistic in terms of EVs, everyone driving one. Where's the energy going to come from? Already, I live in California, and when it's hot in the summer, they tell the electric vehicle owners, when you've got, you know, 10% of people driving or whatever, don't plug it in. We're going to have blackouts. We don't have an electric grid to power this. And yet there you have them with this absurd idea saying we're going to pursue it anyway, even if it brings about your own demise.
Well, you know, I used to live in California, and that is 100% true. There are rolling blackouts, there are brownouts. You're put on energy restrictions during the summer. If you have to get to a hospital and your car is not working, and all of the rideshare cars are electric, you're done. You have to call an ambulance. You have to pay an extra $1,000 for the ambulance service. It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. It's not feasible. If you are just, and so what they do in exchange is then you see the gas prices going up $7, $8, $9, $10 a gallon, right? Within the last 2 months where I live now, the gas was $3.15 a gallon and it's now $3.75. Why? And we're pushing these electric vehicles, you know, on the premise of preserving the environment. But it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for people that live, you know, your energy bill is going to go up. You're going to end up paying way more in electric bills in utilities in order to drive this car. Is it worth it? You know, and it might not work all the time. We've seen in the snow, we saw pictures of, you know, Teslas, you know, not being able to start because the charging stations were frozen. You know, how does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it's insane. I mean, firstly, you have the batteries themselves, which, of course, are absolutely devastating to the environment. Man-made climate change is an absolute hoax. I've written about it extensively, even in my latest book. And at the end of the day, look, I'm fine. If people want to buy an electric vehicle, that's fine. But the point of this administration, by the way, which talks about semi-fascists all the time, this is definitively fascism, the way they're behaving. When they are forcing and compelling companies to abandon certain technology and, of course, to convert to this, you know, alternate, you know, these electric vehicles. And, of course, the way they're doing it is incentivizing them. So, I mean, they're telling us, okay, the American people don't want to buy electric vehicles right now. It's not happening to our delight. It's not enough. And so we're just going to force it. We're going to force you out of your gas-powered vehicle. We're going to make you drive an electric vehicle. And, of course, the only way they can bring cost down, it's like the solar panels, is they use taxpayer money basically to artificially bring it down. It's absolutely insane. But people have to remember at the end of the day that it's really, I mean, when you talk about this green new energy, when you talk about climate change anyway, it's anti-capitalist, it's anti-human. That's really what it comes down to. And I've never done this before, Jeff, been keeping someone like this for basically the whole show. So thank you. I want to take one more short break.
I was just going to say really quickly, yes, they're trying to force you. They're going to tell you what to drive. They're trying to tell you what to eat. They're going to tell you where to work next. They're going to tell you how many children you can. It's going to get worse if we don't stop this. You know, they want to control everybody. That's not a democracy. We need to have choices.
Yep. We do. We do. We're going to take one more short break. And if it's okay with you, Jessamyn, I got one more clip I want to play for you of someone with the brain power of Greta Thunder Thighs. I can't forget her name. Greta
Thunberg.
Yeah. I call her Thunder Thighs because I'm a jerk. But anyway, we'll come back and I'll play that clip for you when we come back. Yeah, let's do it. All right, and we're back with Jessamyn Dodd. We're holding her hostage today for the program. So I want to play cut 10 for you. This is Aisha Siddiqui is her name. She's a climate advisor for the UN. And the audio is not great, so hopefully, you know, everyone can hear okay. But listen carefully to what she says. Go ahead.
And I say this because the climate crisis is not passive. The climate crisis is not a result of natural disasters. It's actually man-made. It's a result of...
I'll say it again, but I think they missed it.
The climate crisis is man-made. And it's not just man-made. white man. It is the result of capitalism, years of colonialism, years of racial oppression. And so if you want to get involved, the way that we save our planet is when we protect the most vulnerable communities among us. And this includes Black trans women. This includes Indigenous peoples. And this is why it includes children and young folk. Because when we protect them, then we can protect everybody else.
I mean, I have to laugh. These people are so, they're literally lunatics. But, you know, the Industrial Revolution, you know, white people, it's our fault. Okay, so it's white people's fault that we have electricity and we have cars and we have all these things that have made life better, air conditioning. And it's so amazing because these so-called vulnerable communities that are suffering, they're suffering precisely because they're not benefiting from those very things that we benefit from, which are supposedly responsible for climate change. We've got, you know, 2 minutes. Go ahead and what are your thoughts?
My thoughts on what she just said is that, for me, that looks like an industry plant. She had all the right talking points. She wanted to mention Black trans women, marginalized community, colonialism, racism. I swear there's a course or a faction, you know, they have these groups that teach people how to talk and how to be an activist, and I think she passed with flying colors.
Well, there is your journalist with her perspective and all of her years of experience working and doing this. That is a very astute analysis. And you're right. And it is this. It's like a checklist, like they're playing bingo in some old person's home. You know, you just gotta say the right things and whatever. I mean, it's another word salad. You just gotta mention the Black trans. You gotta mention white people are bad and colonial. I mean, it's just insane, is it not?
It is insane because, you know, if they're saying that, you know, climate change is affecting everyone, why would it affect Black trans women differently than a white man or a Native American woman? I don't think that climate change, let me put that in quotations, is affecting marginalized communities in any other, you know, it's just insane. I mean, it's honestly like getting in front of a crowd and saying things because people respond to that. They want to be activists. They want to be woke. They want to, you know, be these people who go out and we're going to change the world and we're going to protest. And she said all the right things. And she mentioned all the right communities that get people's attention, you know, because you can't say anything about those communities. Otherwise, you know, you're a bad person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing that we have to actually sit here and use this precious airtime to even speculate and explain this, because that someone in this universe takes that person seriously is just actually very demoralizing, to be honest. But Jessamyn, I want to thank you for your time today. Thank you for allowing me to hold you hostage here on Patriot TV. We're very lucky, and everyone out there is very lucky to have had you with us today.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks. We'll talk soon. All right. Well, that does it for today's Drew Allen Show. Look, I mean, this administration, the Biden administration, they're desperate, and desperate people do dangerous things, like intentionally get us involved in wars that they think are going to help themselves and their agenda and their reelection chances. So, look, be on high alert. We'll be here to carry the most important news and keep everybody up to date. This is Drew Allen. Until next weekend.
Consumers often ask, what should I expect when I take the Bella Grace Elixir? And the answers vary. It really depends on what your health and wellness needs are. I would consider this as your foundational core product for a whole range of health and wellness issues. Let me give you a few examples. If you're a little bit older and you have some joint health issues, some problems with mobility and discomfort, the Elixir is going to be your best friend. If you have some skin health issues, wrinkles, hydration, aging, all of those elements are going to be benefited from the Elixir, including age spots. Now, if you're in a younger demographic, maybe visual health is where you need some assistance. Eye fatigue, dry eyes, all of those are going to be benefited by the Elixir. It's a core product because it benefits so many.